Tonight, the changes continue to trickle into the new WWE. Could AEW be looking for a new TV home? Sasha Banks and Naomi may be back in WWE after all. Becky blows a shoulder while Baszler will battle for a belt in Britain. And 30 years ago this week, Ron Simmons made history. That's next on Sunday Night's Main Event.
We love professional wrestling.
Acknowledge me.
This is Sunday Night's Main Event.
The cream of the crop.
Nobody does it better.
On the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Because you love something fresh and new, don't you?
We deserve better, people.
The best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be.
Do I have everybody's attention now?
My God, what an impact.
Welcome, welcome. It's Canada's wrestling radio show, Sunday Night's Main Event, powered by Great Lakes Beer, a fiercely independent brewery. Order online at greatlakesbeer.com. This show proudly airs for you for free every week on TSN Radio, the iHeartRadio and News Talk networks, through several affiliate stations, and online at snmeradio.com. Now, the show comes early if you're a member of our Patreon. You also get full-length interviews, daily podcasts, the return of some familiar podcasts, and a bunch more bonus content for just pennies a podcast. Patreon.com/SNME Radio. Big shout out to the crew from Dark Side of the Elite, who are back covering AEW on our podcast network. But as things start to fall into place in this new era of pro wrestling, let's take a look at some of the biggest stories from the last week. Here is this week's five count.
You want to hear the breaking news?
A report came out earlier this week that Sasha Banks and Naomi may have signed deals to return to WWE. It was way back on May 17th that Sasha and Naomi walked out on the company with the understanding that there were issues with the storyline that was given to them. WWE made a big deal, a big smear campaign as they left, calling them unprofessional on television, among other things. Since then, under their real names, they've begun taking bookings, including C2E2 this past weekend in Chicago. Now, since the story of this potential return broke, Sasha has canceled an appearance and no future announcements have been made by either woman. WWE has also announced a tournament for the women's tag team titles, which Banks and Naomi held when they left. That tournament begins this Monday on Raw. Could we be in for a surprise as well? After several complaints of lack of communication between talent and management, AEW has added new roles and new personnel to their management team. There are several familiar names, and they've been given new roles when it comes to managing AEW's massive talent roster. Christopher Daniels is going to remain as the manager of talent relations. He's been doing that job basically since he got there. Sanjay Dutt is now the vice president of production and creative coordination, as is QT Marshall, now vice president of show and creative coordination. Pat Buck is now the VP of talent development. Tony Schiavone is now a senior producer and special advisor to talent. And Madison Rain, now a member of the AEW roster, is now also a coach for their women's division. Ric Flair is said to be overall feeling well following his final match in Nashville this past weekend. Now, if you watched the show, you saw the start of the match saw Flair moving relatively well. But after the action went outside the ring, things took a turn for the worse. Flair seemed to be out on his feet numerous times, eventually barely making it to his feet. There's even been reports that Flair may have fainted or been knocked out during some of the match. Even in the post-match interview, he said that he didn't remember half of what had just happened. But one thing seems for sure, Flair has promised this will be his absolute final match. Here's an updated injury list for the last couple of weeks. Becky Lynch is in fact out with a separated shoulder with an unknown recovery time there. AEW's Matt Menard, or Daddy Magic, says that he's also been dealing with some shoulder and neck issues from the Blood and Guts match a couple of weeks back on Dynamite. Jamie Hayter is said to be injured following her match, which aired on Battle of the Belts last night. Dante Martin, as we know, is out for a while, as is CM Punk, still rehabbing that broken foot. And Cody Rhodes heads the WWE injury list alongside Ridge Holland and NXT UK's Ilya Dragunov, who had to surrender the NXT UK title due to his injuries. And this is a big Hollywood story that could have a not-so-great impact on AEW's future. The Warner Discovery merger is making big news across Hollywood, but the question still remains, what does this mean for AEW on TNT and TBS? Now, with the announcements including the shelving of two major multi-million dollar projects, including the $90 million Batgirl film, TNT and TBS's parent company looks to be stopping the hemorrhaging of money after the merger. Now, AEW barely costs Warner Discovery anything, but with its lack of overall growth in the ratings on what they're currently making, the question remains as to whether the company will be able to up their asking price moving forward. Of course, AEW could also shop themselves around, but they've already integrated the networks into so much of their branding, from merchandise to championship titles, it could be a difficult move. You're listening to Sunday Night's Main Event. I'm Mike McGuire, and coming up, it was 30 years ago this past week that Ron Simmons won the WCW World Championship and became a pillar for African-American fans. A member of the SNME Radio family will be joining me to discuss the positives and negatives he's seen for black wrestlers since then. But up next, Dave Meltzer from the Wrestling Observer is here, and he's going to fill in the blanks on all sorts of details, including his personal reflections of Ric Flair. Plus, with the re-arrivals of Dakota Kai, Karrion Kross, and more, who else can we expect to see in the new WWE? Meltzer's up next right here on Sunday Night's Main Event.
This is Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio.
Octo is an angry octopus. Usually he's quite surly.
What did you say to me?
But when he gets mad...
You ain't so smart, is yous?
He becomes angry.
Go home and brush your sister's hair.
It's been said that his sour attitude is due to a slight disagreement with the Great Lakes Brewers.
Those guys better have eyes in the back of their head.
They said they would use 8 ingredients and Octo's beer would be 8%.
But it ain't!
Octo likes the number 8.
What's not to like about it?
The Brewers apologized for the 8, but that made Octo more irate.
Hey, you want to go me?
Nevertheless, there's still something likable about Octo.
Your hat looks like a toilet.
Well, sort of.
Sit down.
Octopus wants to fight by Great Lakes Brewery.
That's right.
It's time for the Wrestling Observer Insider with Dave Meltzer on Sunday Night's Main Event.
Dave, I have to say I've read a lot of your Wrestling Observer newsletters over the years, but this week I felt very connected to a lot of what you were saying, especially in regards to Ric Flair's last match. We'll get there, but first of all, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Not too bad. For those listening, Dave does not have his mic with him this week, so that's the audio difference there. But lots of big things to talk about again this week here. Again, going through your newsletter recap from this week, I mean, tons of great information as always, but it was kind of a reflection, a bit of the conversation you and I had last week, talking about Ric Flair and his life going up to that match. But what did you think watching this thing?
I thought that, like, Jarrett and Lethal did a really good job in their role. But the match was all about Ric Flair, and it was just sad because he couldn't do anything. And I didn't want Ric Flair's last match to be like that. I wanted Ric Flair to go out in a blaze of glory. And to some people, the fact that he won was enough. But to me, a guy who's, you know, you could argue is the greatest performer of all time, and certainly in the discussion, you really want that home run in the last at bat. And, you know, his last match was a dozen years ago. I was hoping, you know, when you saw the training clips and everything, that it would be an amazing performance for a 73-year-old. And what it was, it was something that tells you a 73-year-old shouldn't be in the ring, which isn't fair to say, because Mike Jackson is, I think, 72, and he absolutely belongs in the ring. And Lawler has never been an embarrassment, and he's a couple months younger than Rick. But Rick had a lot worse health problems, and I know he went in hurt. I mean, you could just tell the way he walked in, and from people who had seen him all weekend, I didn't realize this going into the match, but after people said, oh yeah, the autograph session, like he couldn't stand up for long periods of time. And then the second day he didn't even stand up. So it's like he was injured going in, which we all knew. And I mean, the injury that he had was an injury that would keep a normal guy out for a month that's in their 30s. So it'd probably be 2 months. So he went in there because this was the date, but he just couldn't move. And
are you talking about the plantar fasciitis?
Yes.
Yeah, and for those that don't know, that's basically an injury that is it's kind of tendon related that starts at the foot, can go all the way up the leg to the back. I've had it before. That's how I know this so well. But
yeah,
like you said, it can make movement definitely limited, and you saw that especially when he was in the ring. Like Jarrett walked into the lockup, not Flair walking into it as well. I mean, we can pick apart those little things as well. To be fair, at the first half of the match, it was kind of what I was expecting. I thought if anything, he might go, like you were saying, might go into overdrive a little more later on, but it kind of turned out to be the opposite, where the most movement and agility and anything that he had was at the start.
I mean, even when he walked out the curtain, I got worried. Because
right.
I just, watching the way he moved, I don't know if it reminded me of anything in particular. And I brought up with some friends, like the last time I saw Chuck Liddell fight, and when he had absolutely no business being licensed, but he could move a lot more than Rick. I mean, he was 49, not 73. But when Chuck got out of the car and was walking in the parking lot with his family, it all of a sudden hit me. It's like, this guy has no business in a fight, the way, you know, his hips were shot. And with Rick, you know, he walks out and he could barely walk to the ring. And it's like, this is going to be sad. And then, you know, the idea of trying to do a half an hour match, it might have been a lot better at 12. I don't know. But because at the end, you know, he worked a lot of it. I mean, it wasn't like Andrade worked 22 minutes of that match. That didn't happen at all. Andrade was only in to kind of spell Rick, to make, you know, Andrade didn't go out there to have this great performance. Andrade went out there to give Rick breathers. And that's what everybody's basically did when Jarrett stalled, when Lethal stalled. It was all to give Rick breathers. But Rick was the guy who the whole match was about. And that's what made the match really sad, because they wanted to go a half hour, but Rick couldn't move. And it got, yeah, as like you said, it got worse as the match went on, too.
I don't know if it was just worked really well or not, but you could hear that shoe hit him in the head. So I don't know if they're like, okay, let's go hard way or not, but you could hear that actual shoe connect with his forehead outside the ring. So I don't know if that spun him or made him loopy or what, but I've also heard commentary from people that were there saying that Flair said that he may have either fainted or been knocked out during part of the match. He even said after the match that he couldn't remember half of it. So I don't know what credence there is to that or not, but it definitely didn't go probably as well as expected. And you even mentioned the end of the lack of fanfare at the end.
Well, I don't know if it was a fanfare at the end. It was just because it was just kind of like this sight that I didn't think anyone of us really wanted to see. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was sad for me, you know, watching Ric Flair almost my whole life. And, you know, some of the greatest matches ever and one of the greatest performers ever. And I don't know, just because what he did when he was training with Jay months ago, when he first started the training, and watching him do the cardio and everything and the other training, it's like, I think he probably got himself into decent enough shape. And I wish that Ric could have been the guy in the ring instead of the guy who had hurt his foot. And now all of a sudden, you know, can't move anymore. And then he was put in the ring. And there's so many things I could say, like, oh, maybe they should just move it back 3 months so we could get that. But they were, you know, this was their date and it was piggybacking off. And I don't think that they knew if they could draw that kind of a crowd again. You know, and I think if they had gone to Greensboro with the same promotion, they could have. But you don't know. And I mean, the show itself was very successful from a business standpoint. And obviously, Rick's never going to do another match. That we can't see again. You know, even if people would pay for it, you've done it. And people saw something that they didn't want to see.
I know you posted numbers. What was it? Around 450 or 500,000 somewhere paid from the gate. And then
I think 448, which would be the second biggest independent gate of all time behind All In, the show the Young Bucks and Cody did. Pay-per-view was probably close to 29, maybe a little under, 25 to 29,000 on pay-per-view, which, again, for an indie show, would be the second biggest of all time. So it was a big success for that aspect of it. People, you know, for a show with no television backing, a lot of people watched. And you know, I mean, it's like, I couldn't say it was a bad show, even though everything was geared towards Rick. You know, there's a lot of good stuff on the undercard, and the Lucha Libre match was fantastic.
Yeah, that match seemed to be a lot of people's favorites, especially on your Wrestling Observer poll. It's kind of that mixed emotions thing towards the Flair event, right? I mean, it was an opportunity to see a different type of show. Impact Wrestling, we saw right away, was doing all the production behind the scenes and put the setup and everything together, which makes sense. They're Nashville-based, right? So that all comes together nicely. But Flair then goes to Puerto Rico this past week and starts mixing fists with Carlos Colon and things like that. So are we really done seeing Ric Flair get physical, or do you think he's always going to be a presence until he's done?
I think that there will be stuff that he will be doing around wrestling forever. Yes. Yeah. Whether it's just showing up and doing interviews or managing Andrade or things. I do think that he'll do that until he physically can't walk. And maybe even after that, he may bring him out in a wheelchair to cut promos. Who knows?
All right, let's move forward now. There's another big story going through, and some event cancellations have also fueled this rumor a bit. But Sasha Banks and Naomi, as well as the Women's Tag Team Championships, have resurfaced in WWE news. Now, the stories are that this past Friday on SmackDown, WWE announced they were going to have a tournament to crown new women's champions. The story was already put out there. The smear campaign happened by WWE when Sasha and Naomi walked out because of their creative. They left the titles behind, and WWE, since May 17th, has not mentioned the women's tag team titles since. Is there a chance that with these belts coming back, that Sasha and Naomi are on the way as well? Because a lot of people are saying that since Sasha especially started canceling some appearances, that this all is just a perfect storm here and that a deal's already been done.
Last week, which was the last I checked, the contract hadn't been signed, but they were all expecting that it was happening. You know, I mean, they were all on the same page. I was basically told it's as good as done, but they haven't signed, so it could fall through. They may have already signed by now. But a week ago, it was already, you know, they're back. I mean, it could be tomorrow. It could be in a couple of weeks. It's whatever day they want. They're probably pacing things. Like, you don't want to show all your cards in week one. You want to have something big to talk about every week for the next couple of weeks. So, I mean, I think that an agreement in principle was reached over a week ago.
Okay. So speaking of unveiling all your cards week by week here, one of the biggest cards that I think a lot of people hoped for but didn't see coming until it did happen, Karrion / Killer Kross and Scarlett making a debut and return to WWE on SmackDown. And it looks like Kross might be in the world title picture now. There's also been a rumor going around about networks maybe not being happy with Roman having both titles and not having a viable champion on each brand. Is Kross there to fix that problem, or is this just to make him a big star as fast as they can?
Okay, put it. I cannot see this week networks being unhappy because WWE numbers have been awfully strong. They're not going to care about, oh, we don't have enough championship matches when the numbers are this strong. Now, if the numbers go down, of course, networks always throw in like, oh, we would like you to do this. We'd like you to do that. And sometimes they listen and sometimes they don't. But right now, I mean, WWE's the strongest it has been because of Vince being out and the scandal helped ratings. And now it's the curiosity of what's Triple H going to do. And so, you know, I think that their ratings are probably good for a couple of weeks. And after that, you know, I mean, during football season, we're going to see where it settles. As long as they're up above last year's football season, they're in good shape because everything in television goes down every year. And staying the same is a win. So I don't think, unless it's a big drop, which, you know, I guess we'll see during football season, I don't see anyone being all that concerned from a network standpoint. I think that they're probably doing better than hoped for at this. Well, they are. They're doing a lot better than hoped for right now.
How about Bray Wyatt?
It's up to Bray Wyatt and them. And yeah, I could easily see Bray Wyatt back. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, especially since his price is pretty high and nobody's touched him. There was interest in AEW. I don't know how big, but I know there was some. And, you know, the price was so high. And so that's why he hadn't done it. And WWE obviously can afford the price because that's what they were paying him before. I think his return would be a pretty big pop. So the only reason I would say if there would be a no on Bray Wyatt, the only reason it would be is that he doesn't fit into what Triple H wants.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask you next. Do you see a version of The Fiend coming back that gels with all these other talents that are coming in? Or would Bray again have to reinvent himself somehow?
Fiend was a big merchandise mover. You know, there were issues why he was let go, but those issues may have cleared up by now, too.
All right, so let's shift over now to AEW. A lot of people are still talking about something you had brought up on this show months ago, and that is the Warner Discovery merger and the effects that could have on television. But now, with the big announcements that came out, especially regarding some of their Hollywood projects, the Batgirl movie, which basically takes $90 million and shelves it, the reality of AEW staying under these Turner brands, which are under the Warner Discovery brand, do you see them getting a pay boost in their rights fees moving forward when it's time to renegotiate now? Or is it a case where the numbers are reflecting, okay, we're getting what we pay for now, but we're not getting any improvements? Because the numbers have ticked down, obviously, a bit because of the way the talent has been injured and there's been less following on TV. But overall, is there an opportunity for AEW to somehow come ahead in this? Or do you think that it might be time to try and shop it around to other networks?
Well, I would hope that they would be able to shop it around and look. If they shop it around, the money will go up because if there's people interested, it drives the price up. If no one's interested, you know, that's a different deal. I think that they will get more. I know some analysts that think triple what they're getting. And I think that would be with Discovery cutting so much, triple sounds really high. But if you look at their value compared to another show in the demo, they're probably doing maybe 70% of Raw now. And they're costing about 16% of Raw. So if you look at the value that they're getting, if Raw is not overpriced, they could go up 4.5 times, basically, and they would still be at a similar bargain as Raw. So it's possible they could go up a decent amount. You know, obviously, without this, I would say double, triple would have been what I would expected without the merger. With the merger, all bets are off. And it's really up to Tony to find other people interested to drive the price up. I mean, TNT and TBS are probably the best place for them, except for ESPN, which would be the best place. But the problem with ESPN is we don't know if ESPN wants a weekly wrestling show. And they would be preempted a lot on ESPN, you know, or unless they're put on ESPN2. But if they're on ESPN2, their ratings will go way down because ESPN2 doesn't have a big following. But, you know, they have the ability to pay a lot more. But if they get double or triple, they're a super profitable company. All these people who are saying they're doomed. I mean, they're not doomed anyway, but they're going to be completely lost and they'll, you know, and be completely lost. And they are lost because, you know, up until this merger, the reality is all signs were that they would get a giant increase in rights fees and be incredibly profitable at that point in time.
One last AEW note here, Dave. They announced some changes to The Office. Now, a lot of people believe this is shakedown from Jonathan Gresham storming out of the company, basically, after saying that he got communication. But, okay, let me go through the names here, first of all. So we have Pat Buck, Tony Schiavone, Sanjay Dutt, and QT Marshall, as well as Madison Rayne, apparently joining Chris Daniels now in kind of an overseeing management and talent role. Is this Tony just trying to play defense as a company and maybe share some of the responsibility here? Because he's been spreading himself pretty thin for a while.
Tony does too much. And so I think he needs stronger, you know, lieutenants with a little bit more power. And those guys have been his go-to guys. The guys he hired, like when he's had his big creative meetings and sits down with people and go, this is my ideas. I mean, Sanjay and Pat Buck, QT are, those are the guys he's been like going, hey, I want to do this, this, and this. And then they'll say, oh yeah, great idea or tweak or whatever. So that's been the guy. So it's just giving them a little bit more power. And then Madison's just a new hire, you know, as a women's coach, player coach, wrestler. She's worn a lot of hats in Impact. So she does have a lot of experience there. Sanjay has a lot of experience from Impact, did work in WWE. He's been a student of the game since he was 11 years old when his father, you know, brought him his first Wrestling Observer. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, Sanjay, he knows all the different aspects of the wrestling business from the small promotion end to the giant promotion end. QT's been Tony's right-hand man when it comes to things like the streaming shows and timing the shows and things like that. These are people who have been helping him out for a long, long time, and it's good that they got promoted and have a little bit more responsibility and hopefully take a little bit of the load off of Tony's shoulders because he's got a lot on his shoulders.
All right, last note here. Dave, last week it kind of passed by with a bit of a whisper. Not a lot of people really talked about it. But last week marked 30 years since Ron Simmons won the WCW World Championship beating Vader. It happened back in 1992. And at the time, he was recognized as the first African-American world champion. Now, you can say of a major promotion, but even then, there's also names like Bearcat Wright that go back.
Bobo Brazil.
Yeah.
It was something that a lot of the NWA promotions in the 70s, when Thunderbolt Patterson or Rocky Johnson or Tony Atlas would challenge, they would always try to make it this, he could be the first Black world champion. And then when Ron Simmons did it, it was the first. But the reality is that Bearcat Wright had been champion and a world champion in so many places, including WWA, which at the time was when Bearcat was WWE champion, that was the number two belt in the country.
Dave, again, this past week's edition of the Wrestling Observer, a great read. And I guess, what are you keeping an eye on going into next week here?
It's the fallout of Triple H's next set of moves, what Tony's doing to counter. I thought that Friday, he really put on a hot show. And Saturday, there was an incredible main event. Wednesday, I thought, was a really strong show. So, I mean, he's coming up. But, I mean, it's a tough competition. It's going to be tougher for him, as I mentioned last week. with Triple H here, because WWE is going to be the thing that everybody's talking about, and he's got to somehow keep pace. It's not the easiest job in the world right now.
It's awfully strange how the things have flipped in about a year, Dave.
Yeah, it is.
All right. Dave Meltzer from the Wrestling Observer and WrestlingObserver.com. Check out the latest details from him. Dave, as always, thank you very much, sir.
Okay, have a great week.
Coming up next, every once in a while, we like to get a little deeper into this world we love called professional wrestling. Dak Xavier Josiah is going to join me, and we're going to talk about Ron Simmons becoming that first black world champion in WCW, as well as the history of world champions who are of African-American descent, and how things have changed for the better and still could use a lot of improvement. Next on Sunday Night's Main Event.
This is Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio.
If you're a fan of Sunday Night's Main Event, check out WrestlingObserver.com, a daily podcast, multiple podcasts per day, with hosts Dave Meltzer, Brian Alvarez, and a number of others. You get a full library of podcasts dating back to 2005, over 9,000 shows, hundreds of back issues of Dave's Wrestling Observer newsletter dating back to 1991, and so much more. Don't miss out. Check it out today, WrestlingObserver.com.
I'm Manny Arsenal, and I'm with Baller Gear.
Hi, I'm Chad Jeter, and I'm with Baller Gear.
I'm Ricky Collins Jr., and I'm with Baller Gear.
Baller Gear is the official home for the CG brand. 39 Sack, Root Demons, Shaq One, Manny Show, Front Happy Collections, and more. We're also the newest home for the official tees from SNME Radio. Check out the selection of tees today at ballergear.ca.
And Bader's got him up. Oh, went over his back. Got agility by Simmons. And Simmons, he got him in a power slam.
This is Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio.
It was 30 years ago this past week that Ron Simmons in WCW defeated Big Van Vader to become what has largely been known as the first recognized African-American world heavyweight champion in professional wrestling. Now, this has been a controversial subject through the years. And also, it asks a question of where we are today in society with our wrestlers of race from, well, all descents, to be honest with you. This might be a bit of a heavy conversation, but I think it's one worth having, especially when we talk about things like the change in how women are portrayed in professional wrestling, how individuals are portrayed, how people are treated in general. And this was a discussion that actually started on our Sunday Night's Main Event Facebook page with the gentleman who's joining me now, Dak Xavier Josiah. Want to welcome you to Sunday Night's Main Event here. We started this conversation based on something you said about Ron Killings, R-Truth, for those that don't know, and we'll get to all this in a second here, but first, tell us a bit about you.
Thank you, Mike. It's absolute honor. I tell you and Boris and the rest of the guys and Joe all the time, like, how it is a privilege and a pleasure to be able to talk. I've been following, you know, Sunday Night's Main Event since it was called The Law. So that tells you a little bit how much I've been a fan of the whole format. I am a longtime fan of wrestling, but I am also a podcaster who covers the world of anime, comics, movies, and games. Everybody's favorite fandoms, if you will. Wrestling is included in that, intertwines with that every so often. But I host a show called ACMG Presents Talk Time Live. I have a lot of hosts like yourselves that revolves around that industry or respectable industries, and also work alongside with, you know, different people, companies, Repop, if you will, who does New York Comic Con, and I'm moderated for them as well. So I have gotten myself around to these circles quite a bit to know exactly how certain things run within certain industries, you know, in my own experiences as well. So, you know, it's good to be on this platform to talk about such a subject like this.
Well, and I thought it was fascinating just the way we started talking about R-Truth, for example. So I want you to go into a little bit of what you were saying there. I'm going to come with the first counterpoint I had, and then I'd like this discussion to go. So for those that aren't familiar with our discussion, or maybe Dax, you're black.
Yes, black African-American, yes.
And I am
with the community.
Yeah. I am half Chinese, although, again, like I told you in our messages, like I don't look it to say stereotypical look, right? But it's in there. And I think we have interesting perspectives on this. So
yeah,
you had brought up a point about R-Truth, and maybe you felt like he wasn't being given his due anymore.
Again, you talk about perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Because my perspective, which is many people in our community's perspective, sees it differently from everybody else. You know, we seldomly get opportunities to shine. So myself, I had to really fight and prove my worth in this world, which is a little bit more than most per se in my community. Are self-fulfilling prophecies that plagues our communities to believe that we can't. And then when we do, sometimes it's stereotypical, to say the least. So yes, R-Truth, Ron Killings, is a success. Let's not, you know, take that away from him. However, I've seen Ron Killings in the indie scene. I've seen Ron Killings in TNA. I've seen Ron Killings in different aspects. I mean, even when he was, what was he? K-Quick, when he was with Road Dogg back then. And he had a little bit of, you know, he immediately just stood out back then. And then, you know, he went on his own, and this guy made himself a possibility to be more than what he is now, which is a shadow of him. I hate to say it that way. People are going to disagree with that, and that's all right.
Just before we go a little further on this, and I want to stay with this point, though.
Yeah.
I want it to be known to anybody listening to this. We're not debating or arguing each other. We're just bringing up our points. So if you're looking for like some mass tension in this conversation, we're not going to be that way, because we both agree that we love the guy. So please continue.
Like I said, thank you for that. Socrates Cafe is meaning a group of people conversating about different philosophies and understandings without having, you know, this is the way social media should be in a sense. But, you know, I digress. Going back to that, it's basically like Ron Killings. If you've seen Ron Killings before, just like you would see Ron Simmons, if you've seen both of those guys before. Now, granted, Ron Simmons, you could tell that when he got into the scene, he was not letting people do any more than what he had wanted them to do.
Mm-hmm.
But Ron Killings, something a little different. I think he came from a territory, a cultural territory, I should say, where, you know, he had to really do what he needed to do in order to get where he wanted to be. And sometimes us in our community, we feel like that we have to do that. And sometimes it may be considered selling out. Sometimes it could be somewhat of a dignified situation matter that plays into a factor. And you're just thinking in your head, like, I got to make it out. So when I see Ron Killings, it's like, yeah, everybody saw how awesome this dude was as a heel and as a babyface in the indie scene. And then he goes back to WWF, then E, and they kind of R-Truthed him. And then it was okay at one point, and then it was not okay. And then they started getting him to do these goofball angles. I'm pretty sure he comes off as a very intelligent guy, and it doesn't come out that way all the time, or it barely in this day and age. I feel like there's a lot more dimension to him that could have been out, but Vince and all of his theories and old school philosophies and stereotypical philosophies, he always has us in this light based on what he believes we are.
And by us, you mean the African-American community?
Yes. There lies the self-fulfilling prophecies.
Yeah.
That we are. You know, I mean, we've seen it before with R-Truth. We've seen it before with Crime Time. We've seen it before with even Ron Simmons as Farouk to that extent. I mean, he put him in like a, you know, Fruits of Islam type of gimmick. Yeah. I don't think Ron Simmons ever even studied or studied the Quran at all.
No, The Nation was definitely its own thing. I had the chance to actually hang out with the Godfather a little while back, Charles Wright. And Charles actually saw The Nation as a building platform for all the talents in there. It's like, okay, we have to do this thing for now.
Yeah,
but we got to figure out a way to make this into something for ourselves. Sure enough, Mark Henry eventually evolves into World's Strongest Man. Godfather becomes the Godfather, right?
Yeah.
Rock is not even a conversation. Like, it's, you know, that guy just went on to be his own thing. But for Ron Simmons, I have to agree to a point where here you have Ron Simmons.
Athlete
extraordinaire, like legend, Hall of Famer.
Can we say Hall of Famer from two different sports?
That's exactly what I'm just saying right now. Yeah, like, legitimate Hall of Famer from different sports, from different collegiates. Like,
right.
Guy can go anywhere and be like, and frankly, same with Mark Henry. Like, Mark Henry to this day still shows up at strongman contests, and some people know he's a wrestler. He's still accomplished.
He hit the
so
Arnold.
Much.
That's an honor enough.
I understand that 100%. Now, my side of the R-Truth conversation was that this guy, like, I love watching this R-Truth. I loved watching old R-Truth. I loved heel R-Truth. I loved NWA TNA World Champion R-Truth.
Like, I mean, he's entertaining. He's entertaining. The charisma is just oozing with this guy.
And I think that's just it. Like, you can give this guy anything and he will make it something to watch and something entertaining. There was one thing in particular, though, that you brought up, and it was something that he did more on his social media than he ever did on TV, but it was more of like a, back when they were doing the Thunderdome era and they're throwing anything at the wall to see if it'll stick at this point and see if people will watch.
Right.
The Pretty Ricky character, where it's basically R-Truth.
My heart just burned when I just even heard that.
Well, and the funny thing is, like, I've seen him do the Instagram stuff, and it's honestly, it's, you can tell it's just him bored in his house because all these guys were all of a sudden off the road and they had a lot of time. Right. But that was funny. When it came to TV, though, you had a bit of a different feeling. It was him and some of those, for lack of a better term, those Billy Bob teeth that they sell, those redneck teeth.
Yeah.
He'd have his eyes crossed and everything, and it just didn't...
I know people are just listening to this, but you can hear the context in my voice in the description.
If you could sound like your face right now, this is how you would sound.
That depiction, that character that he portrays is very reminiscent of old racist kind of folklore from like the 50s and the 30s and everything, and... You know, I mentioned Stephen Fetchit era and such. And for those who don't know who that is, he's like one of the first African-American actors to ever, you know, make $1 million in Hollywood. However, he did so by playing the most stereotypical. They considered him the template of all of these stereotype characters on TV to this point. Mm-hmm. So when I see anybody with that situation or playing that role, it's like we take two steps forward, five steps back.
Right.
Of people taking us seriously. And when we talk about Ron Killens can do anything, how about letting him be the world champion? How about let's see him in that light? But Vince doesn't see us at that light unless the skin is light. Hence why we believe often that The Rock got his due. And it took us a while before, you know, we saw other people, more darker skinned people, get it to that point. It's not to say that they didn't, because we know Bobby Lashley. Finally, we have a great representation of a darker skinned black man. And the colorism does play a factor in this, too. I mean, a lot of people who don't understand this situation is like, OK, yeah, The Rock has been there. But Rock is considered a lighter skin. And, in a lot of times in Hollywood, you know, the lighter skin black actors tend to get a little bit more opportunity.
So from your perspective, and again, this is just two dudes talking about this, trying to find a relatable line between this conversation. Since the days of Ron Simmons being the first recognized, and that's a weird word to have, but the first recognized world champion of a major promotion.
That's code for on a better TV screen than in the past.
Do you feel that representation has gotten better?
It's a mixed bag. It really is a mixed bag because you just listed off a lot of people, but you look at the list in quantity and you say people have gotten opportunities, but then you look at the quality of that quantity.
Well, I'm considering that too, though, because I'm looking down this list here and even of the WWE champions.
I mean, if we talk about Kofi alone, I mean, like.
Oh, well, Kofi made me cry. And that was one of those things where I got to interview
him. It made you cry at the beginning
afterwards.
And it made you cry at the end.
I got to interview him afterwards, and the first thing I said in his intro was made grown-ass men like me cry everywhere when he became the WWE champion. Mm-hmm. But for me, it almost was more than the fact of who he is and what he looks like, to be honest. This is a guy that I remember watching and loving since the fake
OVW
Jamaican days. Well, I didn't get to see the OVW stuff, but literally as soon as he got crossed over.
Oh, God, did you make me crazy?
Yeah, exactly. But Do you feel that maybe when these talents have been given this spotlight, I look at this graphic, I don't see a lot of foolishness when they're at this level. I don't see the gimmick. I mean, you could argue New Day, sure, were silly, but they were also...
weren't stereotypically silly. Difference between the New Day is that they took control of their own narrative, which is a rarity.
Well, but then now you got Bianca, who is not looked at anything other than as an athlete.
Yes.
Like, and very athletic, but...
I think she's the type of person, she's very strong-minded. I think she's very well-educated. I think she's the type of person that won't let people take advantage of her. I think she was brought up that way. So there's certain people, like I said, we mentioned Ernie Ladd. He's a very smart business dude, and he would never let somebody, you know, he knew what was going on even back then in that era. So there were only certain things that you were allowed to do that he would allow you to do. And then there's some people who will let people do whatever because they don't feel like they have a say in the matter.
The other thing to consider now is that Vince isn't there anymore.
Right.
John Laurinaitis is not there anymore.
Right.
Bruce Pritchard is, so as far as we know.
And Kevin Dunn is still.
Kevin Dunn is, but they still have jobs to do, and that is to follow the lead from the top. So,
slow transition.
Does this excite you yet, or does this make you...
It's too surreal. It hasn't hit me yet that this man is gone because, you know, talking about, hey, I'm a fan who has followed this company in different perspectives from a business standpoint and an entertainment standpoint. I literally, like everybody else, thought that, like, we would probably live past, you know, live long beyond the time that we would see this. I'm like, well, if we saw a black president and a black vice president, I guess we could see Vince get out of here now too.
Dax Xavier Josiah, if people want to find you on the web, where do they go?
You would go to my official website for ACMG Presents Talk Time Live at talktimelive.com. You can find all of our audio episodes and video exclusive episodes.
There you have it. Dax Xavier Josiah. Chat with this man. Get to know him. He's on our social media at SNME Radio. You can find at SNME Radio for everything. Facebook, Insta, Twitter, or even on TikTok. Matt Editor has been working hard on that. So, Dax, thanks so much for the time, man. Really appreciate it.
It's been an honor, man. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks once again to Dax Xavier Josiah. And whether you're listening to the Patreon or the broadcast version, realize the entire conversation will be up at our Patreon feed and our free podcast feed at snmeradio.com. Coming up, we're going to dive deeper into the SNME Radio social media and get some of your feedback on the last week right here on Sunday Night's Main Event.
Chat wrestling all week long by joining the Sunday Night's Main Event group on Facebook. Just search SNME Radio.
Only when light is combined with the dark is the universe perfect and complete. Like a hypnotizing drumbeat heard deep within the swampy shores, a bubbling kettle brews. She engages your spirit, sending ripples across the surface of your soul. Allow her sacred science and divine state of consciousness to unveil your contact point toward complete clarity. Cosmically grounded, she is all at once every element, fueling the nectar of your memory, drip by velvety drip. Ascending from the mist, Haze Mama breaks in balance while granting an alternative perception, otherwise unavailable, unless by virtue of her wondrous alchemy. Shh. Haze Mama New England IPA, available year-round for only $3.50. Great Lakes, brewed for you, Ontario.
Shock the system.
This is Sunday Night's Main Event on TSN Radio.
Could we be hearing that music again in WWE? Well, probably not anytime soon, but it doesn't stop fans from wishing that perhaps the Undisputed Era could make a return to WWE. We've already seen Karrion Kross and Scarlett, as well as Dakota Kai come back. Io Shirai is on the main roster, but the Undisputed Era, or Elite, seem to have a pretty good deal with AEW right now, so we'll see what happens moving forward. It's Mike McGuire here. Welcome back to Sunday Night's Main Event, and some of your feedback this week centers around just that, a wish list of talent that you would like to see return to WWE now that the Triple H regime seems to be taking full effect. In fact, big thanks to Tommy Lang for posting this conversation that Ryan Satin put up on Twitter, saying, which Infinity Stones does Triple H need back on the roster? SNME Radio family member Missy Sykes says there's a lot of people that the fans want back. Braun Strowman, Bray Wyatt, EC3, Johnny Gargano, Candice LeRae, Tegan Knox, Tyler Breeze, Dexter Lumis, Peyton Royce, Mia Yim, Mickey James, just to name a few. Martin feels a lot differently, though. He says that Triple H should focus on making the current wrestlers they have instead of rehiring a bunch of wrestlers. This is true. There's still a lot of names, especially on SmackDown, that are pretty brand new and still finding their way on the big show. J. Dubs Wallace wants a bit of a family reunion here with Bray Wyatt and Braun Strowman. Johnny Gargano also on his list, Sasha and Naomi, and Dexter Lumis as well. And then our buddy Bob Kapoor from over at Slam Wrestling says Taya Valkyrie / Frankie Monet, Bray Wyatt, Bronson Reed, Top Dollar and B-Fab, and the Bollywood Boys. This is definitely a very NXT-heavy list. And then with Karrion Kross returning on SmackDown and seemingly being entered right into the world title picture, there's a lot of discussion on our SNME Radio Facebook page about whether or not they should split the titles again. A lot of fans seem to be calling for one world championship or a champ on both shows. I like the point being brought up that AEW seems to have like 30 titles right now and nobody seems to bat an eye. Well, I don't know if nobody's batting an eye at that. Anyway, there's tons of great discussion always from the SNME Radio family. If you want to be a part of it, follow our socials, or if you'd like to even be on the show here, you never know when I could be calling. This has been my time this week. Thank you again, as always, for listening to Sunday Night's Main Event. And remember, patreon.com/SNME Radio if you want even more. And until next time, as always, thanks for listening and letting me do what I do. Play safe, drive safe. I'll be seeing ya.
Thanks for finding Sunday Night's Main Event. To get the complete show as well as bonus weekly podcasts, please join our Patreon at patreon.com/SNME Radio.